Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
It's a mug's game to pick bests, but were I to indulge in such foolishness in the matter of sports writers, I'd have John Lardner high among the contenders. That's why I was so delighted when the John Lardner Reader arrived in the mail. John Shulian, a terrific sports writer himself, before he tired of chasing teenagers around locker rooms and moved to Hollywood, edited the book. When we spoke this week, I began by asking John to read for me his own favorite Lardner lead, a sentence John Shulian had called the 25 most perfect words ever written in the name of journalism.
Stanley Ketchell was 24 years old when he was fatally shot in the back by the common-law husband of the lady who was cooking his breakfast.
How do you suppose John Lardner avoided worrying that whatever he wrote next would screw up the lead?
Well, he had a lot of practice. He was a master of great leads, and somehow he always got you not just to the second paragraph or through it. He got you to the end. He was an amazing, pure, great writer.
Well, tell us a little bit about the author of those exceptional lines.
John Lardner was the son of Ring Lardner, the eldest son. One of four boys, all of whom pursued the writing life, and only one lived a ripe long life. That would be Ring Jr., who won an Oscar for the movie Woman of the Year and wrote the screenplay for MASH and for The Cincinnati Kid and probably a dozen other wonderful movies. Jim Lardner was the last American volunteer killed in the Spanish Civil War in the 30s. David Lardner was killed covering World War II for The New Yorker. John Lardner himself was a war correspondent in World War II. And as A.J. Liebling said, he was the bravest correspondent he ever saw because when there was a bomb flash in the distance, Lardner would walk toward it to get a better look. Lardner wrote about the theater, and he was a TV critic. He could write about anything, obviously. But what he was first and foremost was a great sports writer in perhaps the golden age of sports writing. And by that I mean sports writing was taking a great turn in the middle of the 20th century. It was moving away from hacks who spewed cliches and kept a bottle in their bottom drawer and took bribes from wrestling promoters. There weren't a great many great sports writers in that period, but the ones who were great were off the charts. And I'm speaking in particular of Red Smith, W.C. Hines, Jimmy Cannon, and John Lardner.
John Lardner began a story about Babe Herman for Sport magazine with another memorable lead paragraph. I wonder if you would favor us with that one as well.
Floyd Caves Herman, known as Babe, did not always catch fly balls on the top of his head, but he could do it in a pinch. He never tripled into a triple play, but he once doubled into a double play, which is the next best thing. For 7 long years, from 1926 through 1932, he was the spirit of Brooklyn baseball. He spent the best part of his life upholding the mighty tradition that anything can happen at Ebbets Field, the mother temple of daffiness in the national game. Then he went away from there. He rolled and bounced from town to town and ball club to ball club. 13 years went by before he appeared in a Brooklyn uniform again. That was in the wartime summer of 1945, when manpower was so sparse that the desperate Dodger scouts were snatching beardless shortstops from the cradle and dropping their butterfly nets over Spanish War veterans who had played the outfield alongside Willie Keeler. In the course of the Great Famine, Branch Rickey and Leo DeRocher hired Babe Herman, then 42, from his turkey farm in Glendale, California, to hit a few more for the honor of Flatbush. A fine crowd turned out to watch the ancient hero on the first day of his reincarnation. It looks like they haven't forgotten you here, babe, said one of the players, glancing around the grandstand. Mr. Herman shook his head. How could they, he said, with simple dignity.
Do you think John Lardner had better subjects to write about than today's sports writers? I mean, Stanley Ketchell, Babe Herman, and then Casey Stengel and Satchel Paige and Walter Hagen and Titanic Thompson. The list goes on and on.
Doc Kearns, who broke not three banks but four in Shelby, Montana. It was a looser time. There's so much in stake in sports today, financially, that looseness, that mischief, while it may still be there in private, is never on display publicly. Plus, you've got TMZ and Entertainment Tonight and rat-faced kids with cameras and their iPhones taking pictures of ballplayers in compromising situations. And it can't be. The world John Lardner wrote about simply is gone with the wind as all those wonderful Damon Runyon characters.
The evidence that John Lardner didn't take himself too seriously is everywhere in his work. In the middle of a story about battling Siki, another long-gone boxer, he writes, and I'm quoting now, "In the unlikely event that you want to visit the scene of the murder 24 years ago of a man called Battling Siki, which is what I did one day recently for no useful reason, you will come across a few surviving landmarks." That, for no useful reason, is refreshing, isn't it?
Yes, we're in an age when people in the media seem to take themselves awfully seriously. The kind of sports column that John Lardner wrote, you really have a hard time finding it, particularly the columns, because he spun yarns. He painted pictures of these great characters. He wasn't saying, look, you got to trade the shortstop, you know, the shortstop has lost range. You know, you got to fire the general manager. There was none of that. It was, these are games. Games are for fun. Come along and laugh with me.
This tone, for no useful reason and so on, is extraordinary given the physical difficulties John Lardner faced. Give us a sense of some of those challenges.
Oh, he had multiple sclerosis, heart trouble, tuberculosis. To read what his great friend Walt Kelly, the creator of Pogo, wrote, he had a difficult private life. He was just afflicted from every direction, it seemed. One of the reasons that he's been forgotten, neglected for so long, is that he did himself the great disservice of dying a month before his 48th birthday in 1960. And there's a great story about his death. He was at home at his apartment in New York working on an obituary of Franklin P. Adams, who was a great humorist and columnist of the 30s and 40s and 50s. And he had a heart attack. Somehow Lardner's personal physician made it to his side. And the physician is beside himself. He's saying, John, you can't die. You cannot die, John. You're a noble man. And Lardner looked up at him and said, "Oh, Lou, that sounds like a quotation." And then he died.
Oh, my goodness. John, I've cherry-picked some of my favorite passages from the book. It's not perhaps entirely fair for me to be the only one doing that. Have you got a favorite?
Oh, let me turn to any random page and I can probably find something that I really like. If you could indulge me, two of them. One is very short and the other one is a little longer. Both are boxing stories. There's something about boxing that I think just stirs the creative juices in all kinds of writers. Here's the short one. When Ezzard Charles won the heavyweight championship by licking J.J. Walcott 2 years ago, Ezzard's manager, Jake Madman Mintz, passed out in the ring. Last July, when Walcott won the title, it was Charles who fell, while Jake remained on his feet throughout. That is my idea of a perfect partnership. always one man conscious to count the house. It's just so beautiful. So much of what Lardner wrote was funny. Only rarely does he let melancholy slip into his work, or just a touch of the blues. And there's a wonderful column he wrote for Newsweek called No Scar, No Memory. And it begins this way. Chicago. An oddly shocking and confusing thing, neither good nor very bad, neither just nor very cruel, happened to Gene Fulmer, the young Mormon prize fighter, in the boxing hall here the other night. When he went into the ring, his life was at its peak. He was famous, newly rich, powerful, confident, rising. A few minutes later, he fell from power and glory to frustration and relative nothingness, and he cannot tell you of his own knowledge what happened. Not only power and glory are gone, the facts are missing too. 30 seconds of time at a climax of his existence are lost to him. To know what went on, he has to be told. To believe it, he has to look at a set of pictures. And this will be true for the rest of his life. It will be a strange, unsettling way to live. And the thrust of this is that Gene Fulmer got knocked out by Sugar Ray Robinson.
Right.
One thing I neglected to say earlier, what a quiet man Lardner was. We live in the noisiest era that I can imagine. Everybody is babbling about everything, and sports writers have certainly paraded in front of the camera. Some of them are quite wonderful, but a lot of other sports writers who appear regularly on camera shouldn't. And John Lardner was this incredibly quiet man. He probably had very dear friends who may not have heard him utter 10 sentences in their entire friendship.
What do you think today's readers can learn from John Lardner's work?
I would hope they could see the heights to which sports writing can go, that they would appreciate the beauty of his sentences. You read these pieces he wrote, and they are so perfectly constructed. There's an economy of language. There's a beauty of language, the great wit. There's the self-effacing nature that the author brought to the pieces. It almost doesn't matter if the names in the stories mean anything to you or not. You know, I mean, I've been under John Lardner's spell since the day I bought in a used bookstore in Washington, D.C., a copy of a book called The World of John Lardner, which Roger Kahn edited. I was sold.
John Shulian is the editor of the John Lardner Reader, a PressBox Legends classic sports writing. The book is published by University of Nebraska Press, and John Shulian joined me from KPCC in Pasadena. John, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, it's my pleasure. Take care.
My conversation with John Shulian, the editor of the John Lardner Reader of PressBox Legends Classic Sports Writing, will be featured on this week's show. I'll also be talking with John Powers about the most recent ramifications, Olympics-related and otherwise, of Title IX. We'll update the Ryder Cup, assuming there's something to talk about other than the rain. We'll examine the question of whether the National Football League's blackout policy makes sense when it seems that fewer and fewer people are inclined to buy tickets to attend games. I'll have a look at how the playground concept of the do-over translates to professional football, and I'll be talking with a talented and committed painter whose work has nothing at all to do with sports, except that he is a Hall of Fame basketball player. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.